Welcome back all. I hope you're all having an excellent start to the week. That's a brilliant weekend. Went to the Bike Shed show on Saturday. That's one of my favourite events in the whole biking calendar. The amount of cool people, cool bikes, just getting excited for the core biking season at the best time of the year. I love it when it gets to about mid-May because you've got all the hopes and dreams of adventure to come. Thank you as ever, everyone, for getting in touch, continuing to share your thoughts and opinions. The best place to do so, comment section below. And if you have a longer story, maybe with some pictures, you can email hi@tuesdayatdobbs.com. Let's begin this week over in Australia. The modern day version of that original 1980 BMW GS, what is often regarded as the original adventure bike. From Brad over in Australia. Good day, Freddie. I've recently returned to biking after about a 10-year hiatus. A couple of years ago, I was diagnosed with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, after serving in the army for practically my whole career. I spent a lot of time trying to find my purpose and to help my mental health, so I decided, with the support of my wife and daughter, to return to bikes. I found a BMW R9T Scrambler. That's the key here, Scrambler. With the extras I was after, and I purchased it. It was down in Melbourne while I live in southeast Queensland, so I flew down, then did a road trip home. All in all, I rode 1,800 kilometres to get the bike home, and I had a blast doing it. I've since started riding with a group of mates, and I'm feeling like things are improving. Brad from Australia, delighted to hear it, Brad. You set something off for me here. Let's take a look at this. Launched in 2016, R9T Scrambler. First of all, with these, I'm just going to jump in here and do a bit of a rant. I think BMW's names for their motorbikes, some of them are absolutely ridiculous. Well, the name of that new one they've launched, I think it's the BMW R12 9T. That is beyond ridiculous. It's the most unnecessarily complicated name. Even this one here, the BMW R9T Scrambler, I think they've got this name wrong. I think BMW, from the very start, I'd be curious if you agree with me here because it's probably a bit controversial, maybe I'm talking nonsense. BMW should have called the R9T Scrambler the BMW Classic GS. Simple. I think that would have been amazing. But anyway, that's my rant over. Launched in 2016, 220 kilos, 110 horsepower, air-cooled boxer engine. MCN sum it up really well with this. I'm quoting here. Don't think of the BMW R9T Scrambler as a fashion bike. Think of it as a great-looking, lightweight version of the GS that is pleasingly lacking from all of the fussy electronics that the latest water-cooled model is so adorned with, but still delivering comfortable rider stance and decent tank range. They've got a superb reliability rating, these bikes. They're simple, relatively speaking, if we're comparing it to the tech-laden GS. And they've got timeless looks. Every single ingredient there is exactly the same as the original ingredients for that 1980 BMW GS. These hold their value frustratingly well. I found one for under £6,000. But that really is the cheapest you're going to get. 2018 model, £5,990, 31,000 miles on the clock with that beautiful silver tank. I don't think there's another biking brand that does silver tanks as well as BMW do. Beautiful looking bike. And Brad, delighted things are looking up for you as well. On now, the Time Warp Honda that's still sold as new in the USA. This is from Dane over in DC, USA. Freddie, nice to see you throwing some love out to the Honda XR650L. It really is a do-everything bike when outfitted right. I plan on taking my XR on a cross-country excursion this year here in the States from Washington, DC. Wow. To the West Coast. Imagine this Honda XR650L going all the way from Washington, D.C. over to the West Coast of the USA. That is an incredible length trip on such a bike. Wow. Carrying on a side note, I picked up a Wingman of the Road toucan for when the little lady joins after seeing your travels. So thank you for the recommendation on your channel. I was just in the UK last week for work and popped into the London Belstaff store to stag myself. I knew I recognised it, Dane. A Belstaff, Brooklyn's jacket. The best jacket I own. Via con Dios. Dane from DC. Dane, if you complete that trip, which I have no doubt you will, all the way over to the West Coast, send me pics of your travel, because what would that be? It's got to be over 1,500 miles off the top of my head, doesn't it? Has to be something like that. Then you have to go all the way back as well. On now to John. The modern blueprint for motorcycle shops. We all know, certainly in the UK, main dealer motorcycle shops are struggling massively, but independent shops, they're popping up all over the place. They're doing brilliantly. So there's clearly a disconnect here. Take a listen to this, and I will get to my point afterwards. From John. Freddie, on our recent trip back to the UK as part of our journey home from our now in the past life in New Zealand, we stopped off for a week in Thailand. As a coffee lover and a rider who likes the Honda Dax, I know you will love this place. The temperature at the time was 31 degrees, humidity was at 89%. We were looking for an oasis and came across the Cub House. It's either a cafe with a Honda shop or a Honda shop with a cafe. You decide, but it's definitely 50-50. We spent a fantastic couple of hours in the air-conditioned showroom full of memorabilia, new Honda Cubs, monkeys, and of course, the Honda Dax. And that is from John. This, John, is, for me, exactly what, where possible, all motorcycle shops should do. It feels like it's getting to a point where it almost feels outdated when you go to some dealerships. For me, in my experience, funnily enough, this is a Honda one done brilliantly, but certainly in the UK, some of the Japanese motorcycle dealerships are so depressing. I went into one, and it was the most sterile environment possible. It was a Honda one. A good dealership will end up selling you a bike. Harley-Davidson dealerships traditionally have been the best dealerships, and they set the standard for decades. And now you've got a lot of other places, for example, Royal Enfield across Europe are popping up with exceptionally good dealerships. So places are catching up now with Harley-Davidson, but for years, there really was no competition in terms of that feeling of event like the Harley-Davidson dealerships when you walk in. There was nothing like it. And this one, you can just imagine having your coffee, having your bite to eat, your sandwich, your cake, just sitting there and looking at these affordable, fun Honda motorcycles. John, I think this type of place is incredible. It takes me back to when I was in Goa and I went to that Royal Enfield dealership. That dealership, single-handedly, probably boosted my interest in Royal Enfields by about 30%. And that never leaves you. You always associate the motorbike with a dealership, at least in my experience. I'm going to show you a few of these Hondas now, because if you want good, simple, honest, fun on a motorbike, firstly, 125cc bikes are often the most fun you can have, but secondly, this trio of retro Hondas, it's a revelation on having fun on two wheels. They are exquisitely fun. I'm going to show you three of them now because all of these you can get for under £2,500. Let me start off with Honda Dax Facebook Marketplace, £2,650. I love it with that high exhaust on the side and then that baby blue color. You know, three-year-old bike, £2,650. I think these are around £4,000 retail, something like that. These basically don't drop in value. So that's the Dax. Then on to the Honda Super Cub. Again, you could argue and say these are actually quite expensive. I'm sure these may be about the £4,000 mark as well. Five-year-old model, £2,500, barely gone down in value at all. And look at those looks. To the untrained eye, that is a 1960s Honda Cub. It hasn't changed at all. I love it. And finally, even the Honda Monkey. This is £4,200 brand new. But this is a six-year-old one, which I think is the second year of manufacturer for under £2,500. I can't help it. I just smile when I look at these bikes. But I've got something for you. Something very special. A gorilla. Anyone heard of that? I certainly hadn't. I'm not talking about the Royal Enfield Gorilla. I'm talking about the Honda Gorilla. Do you have any idea what I'm talking about? Can you, in your mind, envisage what a Honda Gorilla looks like. I'll put you out of your misery. Take a Honda monkey bike and do a number of things to beef it up. Give it a bigger tank, give it a manual shifter. So it's not automatic, this is a manual shifter. And give it a little luggage rack at the front. And what you've got is a Honda monkey bike that looks like it's been on steroids for a couple of weeks. You can actually find all the details of this. It was never for sale in the UK, to the best of my knowledge. Take a look at this. This is on the global.honda website. Look at it! Monkey's sibling, long-selling leisure bike. This bike actually came out in 1978, to the best of my knowledge. Gorilla came out in 78, and it went through all the way. Do you know the truth? I can't quite figure out when production ended, because it looks like this bike had a start-stop production run, was production ceased, and then was brought back two or three times over its production life. The last date I can see here, the final model Gorilla, here we go, 2007. So there were a few little changes, but you would really never know the difference. They stayed looking almost exactly the same. The first thing you can see when you look at it, gigantic looking tank, relatively speaking. And just above the headlamp, you've got that little storage section with proper knobbly off-road tires. Four-speed manual transmission as opposed to a three-speed automatic. It was discontinued and then revived 10 years later at some point. Oh my God, look at that. It's definitely not pretty, but there's something about this bike. So I found you one. Let me see if I can remember where I put this bike. Got it, Facebook Marketplace, 1978. This one I found you is even more special than I realized. This model here, Facebook Marketplace in the UK, is the very first year of production motorbike. 1978, £4,500. But here's the thing, it was listed 2 months ago. My guess is the reason it hasn't sold in 2 months, look, I don't know if it's overpriced because I have nothing to compare it to. But what I can definitely say is certainly in the UK, and tell me if I'm wrong, the vast majority of us will have no idea this bike ever even existed. It's coming from the probably world-renowned David Silver Honda collection, imported by him, was in a shop display, all original condition, no MOT, no tax needed, got the logbook, two sets of keys, and it's got a chrome tank with a brown leather seat. Do you want something unusual? Honda Gorilla. Moving on to insane, oh, this is depressing, insane waiting times for basic servicing. A continuation, I've totally forgotten the bike and the name of the gentleman, but a gentleman had bought a Honda, brand new Honda motorbike. He'd ridden it for a couple of weeks, and then the waiting list for Honda to do the first basic service, I think was something like 6 weeks. So this rider had bought his dream bike, ready for the biking season, quickly bashed out the first bit of mileage, whether it's 400 or 600, went to Honda, yes please, can I have it serviced, ready for the biking season? And then Honda say there's a 6 week wait. And that means that half of the summer, half of the riding season is gone through waiting. This cannot be right. But the gentleman from last week isn't alone. Take a listen. Thomas, Freddie, my Honda PCX125 scooter is due its first 600 mile service, and Sutton in Tamworth told me 9 weeks for exactly the same reasons that the gentleman last week was told. I just did it myself, and if Honda decide not to honor the warranty, then so be it. They can do the second service during the winter. Just one more thing, says, I needed my BMW R90 Scrambler, funnily enough, there's a coincidence, to have its 12,000 mile service. Earliest appointment with BMW, 3 months away. 3 months to get a service. Absolutely obscene what's going on at the moment. Shaffers says this, just last week I returned from a beautiful 2.5 week Scottish trip on my Moto Guzzi V85 and I accumulated 6,500 kilometers during that time. Now I have to wait 5 weeks for a 10 kilometer or a 10K service. Fab FM Spain. In Spain, Honda you can get in to have your bike serviced within a few days. I ran in my new Honda NT1100 and it was 2 day wait time to get booked in. That's it. Then the second service 6 months later was booked in within 5 days notice. Yeah, fab. I remember experiencing this and being very surprised pleasantly with the Spanish wait times for mechanics. No wait times at all. I remember for car and motorbike, Tenerife and I think Barcelona as well. Just really, really quick service there. Two more from this I'll do. Ogassi, 1798. Freddie, with regards to Honda and the issue with the service period, no way. No way Honda would stand a chance in our courts if they tried to screw the user when it was them that could not provide the service option. They would get their ass handed to them. He needs, the gentleman from last week, to do the first service with genuine Honda parts on video and carry on riding, then get into Honda when they can get him in. The issue is with Honda and not the gentleman from last week. I think that is extremely good level-headed advice. I think that's exactly what I would do if I were in this situation. I wanted to try and keep my warranty. And I'll wrap it up with John. Back in mid-March, I bought a Royal Enfield 350 Meteor with only 200 miles on the clock and 9 months old. I immediately tried to book it in for a service for the 300-mile first service. That's it. These are the most basic services. There is nothing in depth here. Yet some of these waiting times are huge. And I was told I would have to wait until mid-May. That's 2 months. 2 months, 9 weeks. I was also asked if I had bought the machine from that particular dealer. And when I said no, they said, well, you'll have to wait longer. That was the same reply at 3 Royal Enfield dealers, just because the bike wasn't bought from them. Most interesting thing I found here, it doesn't seem brand specific. It's just with all of these dealerships closing down now, they don't have the time. They don't have the space. You basically have to go to an independent and be really firm with the dealers. I know it's easy for me to say I'm not in this position. Be really firm with the dealers and say, look, you cannot hold your side of the bargain for me to honor my warranty by getting it serviced with you. Well, you can't service my bike because I've bought my bike, incredibly, you may be amazed, as a form of transport. And as a form of transport, I need it. I can't wait 8 weeks for it. So that's your problem. I'll service it myself. You need to keep my warranty honored because it's your problem and not mine. Moving on, rant over, Bike of the Week. Thank you all for that. That's really useful consumer advice. Bike of the Week, I will start with two Americans here who have, without realizing it, given me inspiration for my Bike of the Week. The first is Steve. I know Steve's a massive Harley fan, so take a listen. Freddie, please explain to me why you guys over there love little displacement bikes. Steve, yeah, I didn't even plan this, but this episode has been largely tiny displacement bikes. Carrying on, if I'm going to spend real money for a bike, why the hell would I get a 350 to 400cc bike? If it ain't 1,000cc or more, it's just a toy. Steve, I think I replied to you on this, but I think, and I welcome all of your opinion, the reason we like smaller capacity bikes in the UK, our roads are far smaller, the country is far smaller, and relatively speaking, it is so much more crowded. In every area of the UK, we're allowed to lane split, i.e. filter, and for filtering, you have got to have a small, slim bike. And then when you want to find some bike parking, again, the biking bays are always so busy, the smaller the bike, the better. Then we get to the point that just the USA, you have so much more money than us, you know, per person. The US is like the UK on steroids. Per person, obviously, there are fluctuations, but there's just more money going around in the US. So these smaller bikes make sense in almost every situation. However, that being said, the BMW GSs in the UK are always incredibly good sellers, and they are really, they're every bit as massive as these big American cruisers by the time you've got the panniers on. The fact the center of gravity is so high. So that kind of chucks my argument out of the window a little bit, Steve. I think it's just, we've all, certainly in the UK, I think in Europe too, it's the same. We've all been brought up with smaller bikes. It's like it's just in our history, smaller bikes. Whereas the American history, it's all the bigger the bikes, the better. And that upbringing, whether you consciously play into it or not, that upbringing kind of just feeds into the kind of things you like. I think it's something to do with that. But Steve, I've got a bike for you, so bear with me. I'll do one more here, another American rider from Blues Overlord. We love our baggers here in North America because we often have to drive long distances. So why doesn't Triumph make a bagger out of the bobber straight from the factory for the American audience? The old Thunderbird LT, I'll put a picture of that here. This was a tiny seller, but I remember when it came out. This looked like an old man's Harley and wouldn't get young buyers into biking these days. And then you've got the Rocket 3. That's just too big for new riders, and £500 bagger is the ticket with a 1200cc engine. I wouldn't, for example, put bags on my Speed Twin, but integrated detachable bags from the factory on the bobber, that'd be cool. I get that you can add bags to the T100, T120, etc., but a streamlined bagger made to be a legitimate bagger, that would sell. Okay, I'm going to try. This won't be perfect, I admit. I'm going to try and tick both of your boxes here. I need a plus 1000cc bike. I want to do a British bike here to show that the Brits can make these huge bikes that the Americans maybe feel more at home with. It won't be a bagger, but the reason I want to do this is it pretty much ticks the box of a bagger without being a bagger out of the box straight from factory. I cast my mind back to the DGR, Distinguished Gentleman's Ride, 2 weeks ago. Group of very cool guys, I was chatting to them. All of them have really cool looking bikes. You've got the likes of the Triumph Speedmaster, Triumph Bobber, and two of the bikes I'm going to discuss. I'll take you back a bit. 2009, Triumph decided to release the huge Triumph Thunderbird, the cruiser motorbike, the 1600cc engine aimed directly at taking on the likes of Harley Davidson in the USA. The problem is many have tried and failed to bring out huge cruisers and finally win over the North American market, but it's never ever going to happen. Even if Harley Davidson are in trouble at the moment, no one's ever going to take the crown off Harley Davidson for big cruisers in the US. Never, ever gonna happen. So you're almost guaranteed that building a big cruiser that's not American, almost 100%, it will be a failure. But Triumph still did it with the big Thunderbird. That came out in 2009, but here is the bike I want to discuss with you now, because it's one of the two bikes I saw. It reminded me about these often forgotten colossal brutes of bikes. The Triumph Thunderbird Storm. Take a normal Triumph Thunderbird, bore it out from 1600cc to 1700cc, increase the horsepower from 85 HP to 96 HP, take off the single circular front headlamp, put on twin circular headlamps, black everything out, make it look as mean as possible, and strip it back to the bare bones. And there you have it. Triumph Thunderbird Storm. I remember seeing this when it first came out. I remember the advertising that went around it. This was a big, intimidating bike. I thought this was one of the coolest looking bikes I'd ever seen at the time. And here's the key. One of the two bikes I saw at the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride had the Hepcombe Becker panniers on the side. These are, if you choose a certain one, these are lockable panniers. And this looked really, really good. It looked like it was straight out of the Triumph factory with these panniers. So you can add these Hepcombe Becker panniers to the Storm. There you go. You've got a big British bagger style bike. And of course, you can take off those panniers that really do look like they're built in if you just want to weave through traffic. The problem is with this, these were niche bikes. The Triumph Thunderbird is a niche bike. The Triumph Thunderbird Storm is a niche version of a niche bike, and that means that these did not sell in big numbers at all. These were really rare bikes, and prices reflect this. You need to pay, and it was actually quite a struggle to find this. They're usually about £8,500. I found one, however. Do you know, I had to go to a company I haven't seen before, bikesinstock.co.uk, and they're advertising one. Beautiful silver paintwork, everything else blacked out, £1,000 for a 2013 model with 10,000 miles on the clock. It's still a lot of money that these go for, but I wouldn't worry about that too much thinking in those terms, because if you think more in terms of this is bottomed out, these are never going to drop another penny, in my honest opinion, from this £7,500 to £8,500 mark, then you should say that relatively speaking, your money's fairly safe in there, because it's just not going to drop. And they are really intimidating looking bikes. I think Triumph did a good job with these. They went under the radar. They're a real talking piece now when you see them at places like biking events and shows like that. Very, very good looking bike. Really nice stance. And I'll wrap it up with that big brute. Thank you so much, everyone, for watching. I really hope you enjoyed it. Have a brilliant week all. I'll see you all in the next one.